Welcome to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. No calls today. We got a special guest on to talk about some important stuff.
Yeah, a topic that we normally get into and usually have at least some head shakes and some disappointing sighs after we talk about some of these stories. But tonight we're going to talk about the other side of it, learning about it, certainly trying to stop it and doing the best we can for it. So, hold your calls tonight because we're definitely got somebody on that we want to talk to who's got all sorts of she's way smarter than we are and knows way more than we do about anything.
It's not hard.
Well, I know it's a low bar.
This one is clear cut. No mistake on this one.
It's a low bar saying that she's smarter than us, but I'm going to say right now she would probably crush us in any sort of intellectual debate. So
yes, no,
we want to listen to her talk a little bit. For those that don't know, the University of Calgary has a very productive, actually two schools out in Calgary do, Mount Royal does as well, regarding sexual violence. They have a very productive woman there by the name of Carla Birch, who is joining us on the program tonight to talk about her role as a sexual violence support advocate and the new course, the new training that she's providing to University of Calgary Dinos athletes. I want to welcome Carla Birch to the show. Carla, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We are very excited to talk to you because, again, this is something that we often hear about, we often read about, we often get told about after it happens, and we don't understand how things go off the rails so much. So we want to maybe talk to somebody who's got some good insight and certainly more of an expert than we are about all this stuff, and that would be you.
Thank you so much for the invite. I'm happy to come here and talk about something I obviously think is really important as well.
So before we get into that stuff, because we want to get to know you a little bit as well, Carla, because people should know who you are. For those that don't know, we're going to dig into your past here. Rumor out there that, well, and I know that you already corrected me on this, but let's correct it anyway overall. There was a rumor out there that I had read that you were once a teacher, but you have told me that's false. What did you do in a previous career here?
Yeah, so I did work for the Calgary Board here in Calgary, but I worked as a behavioral kind of instructional support role, working with youth trying to kind of help develop more behavioral modifications so they might end up in my classroom because they were struggling with kind of personal issues in their lives, and so definitely more of a social work role, which aligns with everything that I'm doing now.
So today you work in academics, but not in the traditional teacher-student relationship at your current place of work at the University of Calgary. Your position at the U of C is sexual violence support advocate. What kind of schooling goes into becoming a sexual violence support advocate?
Yeah, I think that probably varies for a few people. I have a degree in justice studies and a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. Both of these things help me understand the justice system and the large kind of institutional system that I'm in. But I think the real valuable training for the work that I'm doing was when I was doing my master's of social work. It's here that I was required to do the very painstaking work of critically examining the world we live in to better understand what power and privilege have to do with things like oppression and discrimination. I think it's really easy to notice when, you know, we're being treated in a poor way based on maybe a social identity marker like race or sexual orientation. Especially when the incidents are intended not to be hidden. So somebody maybe makes a racist slur, a homophobic slur. But it's much harder to identify and notice these things when we sit in places of privilege and we're not being mistreated based on these kind of characteristics. And so they're a bit more hidden sometimes and built into our systems and our institutions and our society, our cultural practices. And if you've never really been asked to carefully consider how those things show up, who they might impact, why do we do the things we do or think the way we do, you might not have need or think you not really realize that there's any need for you to get involved in some of these things and to think about them. These are considered unconscious forms of bias that we are kind of all subjected to because of the similar attitudes and beliefs that are in our lives, they're in our homes, schools, media, peer groups, religious and spiritual practices, and some of them have been presented as facts to us. So being able to unlearn some of the social scripts or ideals that are not based in fact, but rather years of historical devaluing, say, of certain people or bodies, it's often hard. And as we begin to kind of understand the ways that these contribute to harm that's caused to others. I think that's really the insertion to the rest of the conversation that you want to have today. So it's this education that kind of helps me create a safe space, an opportunity for people to speak, to kind of think about some of this stuff, to unlearn what they might be knowing, to seek some support. Not only those who've experienced harm, to help understand a moment that was maybe created that wasn't their fault, but also how I inform others in terms of education around violence prevention. So a lot of the work I do here at the university is around sexual violence, and reporting acts of sexual violence is incredibly difficult and frightening. It takes a lot of courage for people to come forward, and we know that the best result occurs when somebody is met with a really appropriate response. So all of this work kind of helps create, I've had to do the work to look at all the ways that I might show up that I hadn't examined before that might have been racist, might have been homophobic, might have been sexist, any of these things. And it's a lot of hard work, but really allows me to do this work in a really productive way.
I mean, it's sort of a not a regular question, I guess, to ask here, but in today's sort of society, I mean, especially we see it, you know, on the news all the time, you know, us versus them, you know, in terms of the way that sort of the media pits various groups against one another. And is it harder? Do you find it, you're getting asked more for more help, for more resources on your own to sort of help some of these students and people that have come forward to speak to you?
Yeah. I don't know that I believe the problem is any worse maybe than it has been in the past. I think we're seeing people find the strength and the courage to speak up. We're talking about things more, and so people are finding strength, I think, in allies and people who have same lived experiences, and it's really pushing us to start to things that we might have been able to, you know, dismiss or turn our heads to. We're really having to kind of show up and pay attention and think about how we're going to do things different. So, yeah, definitely have a lot of, there's no shortage of work.
Well, that's good for you, I guess. It keeps you employed, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
You're also the treasurer, from what I understand, on the board of the Alberta College of Social Workers. Prior to being hired by the University of Calgary, where else have you worked in terms of doing social work or other jobs, if that's mm-hmm. applicable?
Yeah, so as stated earlier, I've worked in education. I've also worked in mental health sectors. I've worked in corrections. I've worked in the homeless sector.
Oh, wow.
And of course, in gender-based violence areas, the most recent position I had, I was in a domestic violence shelter here in the community in Calgary, working with women and children fleeing domestic violence.
So you started at the University of Calgary in 2017. In the 2 years you've been at the university, what has the response been like regarding your position among both students and faculty?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's been really, really good. People are great here. They're happy that the support is here to kind of navigate such a complex and sensitive issue, whether they've experienced harm themselves or they know someone else who has. I find they really want to help, and they want to do it in a way that's meaningful and doesn't cause more harm. And so they're really willing to reach out, get some education to maybe help feel more equipped if somebody does come up to them. Obviously, disclosures don't just happen in my office. People will talk to someone they trust, so that might be a faculty member, that might be a staff member, and people really want to be ready to support in a really good way, so it's been great.
So before we get to the reason that we invited you on the show, Carla, I understand you were, you know, bit of an athlete, bit of a weekend warrior there when you're not doing good in and around the University of Calgary. True or false, you play a lot of sports, and if so, what sports do you play?
Yeah, definitely would say I've played a lot of sports in my life. I think I played softball, rugby, ringette, and swam at pretty competitive levels when I was younger, and now I've kind of moved into doing sport more for fun and leisure. So I'm still playing ball. I moved over to hockey. I like to golf. I live in Calgary, so I get to go out to the mountains and hike and bike and snowboard, ski, amongst many other outdoor activities out here. So yeah, I love sport. I've tried, if you name it, I've probably at least tried it.
Thanks for rubbing that in, by the way. And
The mountains. Sorry.
The flat prairies just don't have the same effect out here. So.
Yeah, well, I am from Saskatchewan originally. So
oh, there you go.
I understand.
A little more hilly there.
Yeah.
The reason we bring up sports is, A, that we are the hockey show, and B, you've been working with the athletes at the University of Calgary by educating them on sexual violence in sports through a formal training program. Mm-hmm. The first team to step up was the Dinos women's hockey team. How did the session go with the ladies?
Yeah, you know, it was great. I just feel so honored. I can't say enough about the Dinos women's hockey team for trusting me and bringing me in. I think the athletes seemed a little bit hesitant maybe at first, or maybe a bit curious about why they were receiving this type of training and what maybe what they were going to get out of it. But I got to tell you, they worked so hard. They became more and more comfortable with the material and sharing with one another. And the sessions were so, every day I left just with such gratitude. The only way these things work is if people are willing to be honest and vulnerable with one another. And they really trusted me to take care of the safety in the room. And that's how we got some of that work done. People were respectful and they were curious. And I just heard such good feedback by the end of it. Started off hesitant and left at the end. They were really grateful that they got this opportunity.
So for those that may not be aware, and this is something I think that needs to be talked about for sure, because this program is sort of new and it's sort of, you know, uncharted territory for a lot of people. Give us a quick rundown on the topics that you go over with the athletes in this formal training program you've put together.
Yeah, for sure. I do think the training that we're doing now with our athletics group is a bit unique because of my position and because it needs to be tied into sexual violence prevention. But as we know, and we might talk about a little bit later, a lot of acts of hazing within sports teams do bleed into the realm of sexual violence. So I think the work is unique, but also really productive and meaningful. And so all of the sessions build off one another and feed into the knowledge and understanding of the next session, and then ultimately hazing. We work one day a week together for a month, and in between each of the sessions, there was some homework, as people really need a chance to see and practice what they're learning in really practical ways in their everyday life. So this helps make sense of things and allows people to see what they want or what they may not have maybe noticed before. So in session one, we define sexual violence and discuss what the root causes of sexual violence are. We look at attitudes and beliefs, values that often promote, perpetuate, and are connected to acts of sexual violence. Pretty heavy start to the program. Session two, we think about gender as a construct and a performance that often we feel bound by. So we look at how do we uphold or subscribe to these strict gender norms. Who do they benefit? Who do they harm? How might you begin to challenge and disrupt these in your own life, but also in sport? And then in session three, we talk about consent. So we look at how we're consistently experiencing moments where we're asking for consent and managing refusals every day. And so whether that's at school or in sport, with friends, at work. So not just talking about consent in the realm of sexual violence, but kind of as a topic generally. And then in session four, we talk about hazing, and we talk about if there's anything negative about hazing, what's the difference between hazing and team building, and then how is consent connected to hazing?
So, I mean, hazing's a pretty important topic, and we talk about it probably way too much here on the hockey show, only because it seems to pop up way too often in mm-hmm. society. Just before we get into this question, I just want to remind everybody we're with Carla Bursch. She is the sexual violence support advocate at the University of Calgary. If you missed the opening of the show there, we're talking all about the course that she is teaching, or the training that she is teaching out there to the Calgary Dinos athletics program. So again, hazing is something we take very seriously here on the hockey show, and it's one that I'm actually really glad that you're addressing, because I don't know if enough people realize that the fine line between hazing and, as you said, team building is not as fine as everybody seems to think it is. Mm-hmm. We've seen instances across Canada in various sports, including hockey, and at various levels, including the youth sports level. So it's pretty clear that this is still a problem that no one's really talking about when it comes to, you know, these athletes anyway, in our view. Honestly, in your view, with your expertise, Carlo, how big is the hazing problem that we see in Canada?
Mm-hmm. you know, without having necessarily done any research, I can't quantify that problem, but it definitely exists. I don't have to make that point, I don't think, and I think that alone is a problem. So it's definitely, you know, I haven't worked with a team that doesn't behave in or isn't involved in some type of hazing. So it's really about trying to understand what are you trying to achieve through these practices, which usually we get to the idea that we're wanting more of a team building activity. But when we structure the sessions the way I've talked about them and set them up, it really gives people a chance to understand how power and privilege play into session four. All of the sessions start to make sense. And I'm probably digressing a little bit in terms of your question there, but yeah, it definitely exists. And I think for me, it doesn't really matter how many teams are doing it. It's a problem. It's happening, and that's the problem.
Yeah, once is too much. So no matter how many teams are doing it, once is too much. So
absolutely.
Something I don't think that people realize is that hazing happens to both male and females in both male and female sports.
Yeah.
It's almost viewed exclusively as something that happens in male sports. How does hazing differ between male athletes and female athletes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're seeing a rise in hazing rituals amongst female sport teams. Often we'll see a difference in the female sports teams maybe are less physical and sexual acts of violence amongst women in those spaces. It has been happening there as well to some extent, but we're seeing the severity and behavior start to escalate. But the point, whether it's the women or teams are doing it or the male teams are doing it, the point or the goal of hazing is still present, and it's often to produce or reinforce power. And so, again, kind of shifting away from why it's wrong, I don't think we don't teach based on telling somebody something's wrong. I think that's really hard for people to kind of want to change or to listen to the message. And instead, a lot of this work is around, why are we doing it? Are we achieving what we're setting out to do? What are some of the underlying factors that are at play here that you might not have noticed? So we talk a lot about power within a team and who has power, who has less power. And based on those conversations and the conversations of the session before, if you're asking somebody to do something that you might consider hazing or team building, but there's somebody on the team that doesn't hold very much power, do they have the ability to consent to that activity? And so you can start to see the athletes put some of this stuff together. And of course, we talk about what some of the harms happen when people are forced to do something without their consent and permission. And now they're starting to connect that to some of the hazing stuff. Even if it's just asking somebody to step up on a chair in a club and sing happy birthday at the, you know, as loud as they can, that maybe doesn't seem like a big act of violence. But for somebody who's terrified of, you know, speaking in public or just being that kind of extroverted, that could be awful. That could be an awful experience. So really trying to get away from these things have to be super severe to cause harm, which sometimes we see that difference between men, the male and female teams.
You talked just a few seconds ago about how you've worked in mental health and certainly know a little bit about the mental health side of it. And certainly that establishment of power is almost, in some cases it's peer pressure, in other cases it is a form of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we've heard, a little bit about how hazing differs between males and females, but the trauma seems to be the same for all the victims that have, experienced hazing in both genders. That is physical abuse, but also some mental abuse and certainly some emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Diamond, an associate professor of orthopedics and rehabilitation and the associate professor of pediatrics at Vanderbilt, noted that mental health of these students needs to be addressed following a hazing incident, citing that, quote, suicide is the third leading killer of all college athletes, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes are basically taught from a young age that they're not supposed to talk about injuries, which are essentially just vulnerabilities. But do you find that a lot of athletes refuse to discuss emotional and mental vulnerabilities in your position?
Yeah. I think they do on their teams with maybe their teammates and coaches and staff. We need positions like this on campus. I'm a confidential source based on the professional designation that I have. And so it's a really safe place for people to come in. I don't have any obligation to share anything that they say with me with anybody else on their team or coaching staff or the university, which also, just to note, is also the conditions of the sessions that we do. So I want people to be able to open up. I want people to be able to talk about some of the things that might be bothering them or things that they're not, maybe they need more learning around. But in conversations with the women's team, it was very clear that none of this would go back to their coaches, and the coaches were also aware of that. So really just making space for people to be able to feel vulnerable and know that it's not going to get back to a coach that might see them differently or view them differently, that we're doing this learning together as a team, outside of kind of some of the more strict structures, I guess, on that team. But the piece that we talk a lot about in the sessions is these gender norms, which I think really affect our male athletes in terms of talking about any mental health concerns. We have some pretty strict boxes around what, you know, men can act like, can be like, can feel like. And so we do some work trying to break that down and say, where does that start? Who does it serve? And when we do that work, we see a lot of these men open up. They open up with each other. They maybe open up with me. They might go home and open up with a partner, because they've been given permission to kind of let this guise down, let this bravado down, that not only do they have to hold within society as men, but in a sports culture setting, it seems even a bit more prominent. So that's part of it. I think the other piece is if you're living, you know, there's a lot of homophobia within sport culture. And I think there's a bit of a disconnect between, you know, I'll hear people say, well, I'm not homophobic. But then on the ice, they might say something like, you know, some homophobic slur. But they don't see the connection between that and the violence to who might be on their team, who doesn't identify as straight. So we do a lot of work around that and some realization and ability for people to just be a lot more sensitive to who might be in the room. I might not be able to come out in a locker room, not because people are actively saying they hate gay or lesbian people, but if they're telling sexist jokes or homophobic jokes, that doesn't make me feel like I can come out. And I mean, the whole point of being on a team is to be able to bond with one another, to be able to feel authentic and that people, you're connected and you're welcome and you're accepted. And so I mean, I know there's lots of research out there as well around gay athletes particularly kind of weeding themselves out of competitive sport at about the age of 13 because it's just too homophobic. And if there are folks that stay male or female, it really affects or impacts their ability to perform while they're constantly managing being in the closet, listening to homophobic slurs either on their team or on another team. So there's a lot of work that goes into making space for people to, I guess, be more vulnerable with each other, be more sensitive, be more understanding, and why that's important, and how that can contribute to their overall team success.
Do you see, and I mean, this is sort of, again, something that, you know, gets thrown around, a term that gets thrown around a lot for especially for male athletes when it comes to topics such as that, but I mean, I don't like to brand it all as, you know, quote unquote toxic masculinity, but mm-hmm. is that something that you constantly have to fight through when a male athlete may be sitting in front of you?
I don't like the word toxic masculinity either. I think we've moved away from that a little bit, and I understand why. But we do talk a lot about gender norms, gender socialization. And I think there is some resistance at the beginning. I think people want to defend, maybe if they're feeling a little bit attacked. But the more we do this work and the more that they see this is coming from a place that has nothing to do with attacking masculinity at all, but permission for men to actually be more who they are. And when the men that I work with see that, there is just almost a melting of this I don't know, this idea that you've been carrying around with you for your whole life about what it means to be a man, and recognizing that it actually is hurting me as well, as causing harm for other people. And I don't have to live that way, and I don't have to subscribe to that. So I see a lot of men actually, this is a gift, and I've heard people tell me that.
So I don't know if this qualifies as hazing, but it certainly would fall under the realm of unacceptable behavior and even bullying. Sports parents who berate the officials, the other team, their kid, and his or her team from the stands as they live vicariously through their children. It's a problem at rinks everywhere, it seems, and we are gearing up for the hockey season once more. This is more conflict resolution, but what should one do as a fan in the stands to defuse that situation?
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I think it's about noticing, which we talk about a lot in the sessions, is being able to notice and name something as violent that we might not have before. So being able to notice that, and then kind of getting to a place where we're more uncomfortable saying or doing nothing than we are saying or stepping in. So if you feel safe, maybe you can let the person know that you find the behavior is making you uncomfortable, that you would like them to stop. We have some, you know, you can distract somebody, you can sit. I know people have done that before in teams, sit with a parent that might be somebody who gets excited a lot at games, and kind of talk and distract them through the game so they're not yelling at a child or a ref or a coach. I don't know about out there, but I know Calgary Minor Hockey has a course out here called Respect in Sport that parents who have children enrolled in hockey have to take if they want their child to play. So perhaps someone could use some of that training to remind somebody who's acting out why their behavior is unacceptable, or remind that person maybe of what they've learned about how to be respectful at the rink, what behavior might be more appropriate. You can also tell someone, so maybe there's a rink manager, maybe there's security in the rink. And I think if it gets serious enough, I saw something in news not that long ago, you can call the police. And then if it's safe to do so, sometimes documenting something is really helpful. So if you can, you know, take a small video on your iPhone, people seem to have those a lot, or take some notes so that you can help document something, that's also useful.
I know we've had a couple people on this summer who have extraordinary jobs, and one of the ladies we had on was Amy Martin. She's a fantastic young lady who referees in the Canada West system and certainly all over Manitoba and has done a bunch of stuff. And I mean, we talked to her about facing some of the sexism that she faced, but we wanted to know from her point of view in terms of getting, you know, young referees and young officials to remain in the game. How do you break the cycle when, you know, a parent or a coach just goes off and like, it seems like there's no real, I don't know, deterrent when people want to sort of take out their anger on an official. Nobody really sort of steps in. And I'm not saying that you have to provide an answer or anything like that, Carla, but I mean, can people come to you? Can people from not at the university, no, you know, non-athletes, non-University of Calgary students, can they come to you? Can they find you on the university campus and maybe talk to you about some of the problems they're facing?
Yeah, you know, I would be hard-pressed to turn anybody away, but technically, no. I would do my best to find some supports within the community here in Calgary and get them connected with somebody that could help them, for sure.
Okay, at least there's options, then. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing I think everybody's looking for, is just options to maybe get something solved, if that's the case, then. So, Scott Alden Mathers, Sociology and Justice Studies Department at Eastern Washington University, and Jackie Chavez, Department of Criminal Justice at Troy University, penned a paper where a model called the TAIR model is introduced. TAIR, spelled T-A-I-R, which stands for Tradition, Acceptance, Initiation, or Ritual, as the explanation for why most hazing incidents occur in sports. Based on these four, I'm going to loosely call it explanations, the author cited a Hoover and Pollard 1999 study that's of 61,258 NCAA athletes, that only 12% of those surveyed reported being hazed until typical hazing behaviors were discussed. Once discussed, that number rose to 80%, with many victims being dissuaded from reporting the hazing activities. As awful as it sounds, and you try not to label everybody like this, but are we as a society simply ignorant to what constitutes hazing activities?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, unfortunately, we are. As much as we are often I guess, ignorant about what constitutes sexual violence or racism or homophobia. We just haven't had enough conversations openly and honestly about some of these things. And this is where I think the interesting, it gets interesting in terms of the work I do around gender-based violence and sport and hazing and some of this stuff. When we look to prevent acts of sexual violence, we need to talk about issues of sexism, but also racism and homophobia. So there's a big disconnect, again, you know, when people might say, you know, I don't want to repeat different slurs, but they say these things and they don't realize that they're forms of violence. So like hazing, which is often a form of bullying,
right,
all of these issues are about power and control. It's about helping people see that things that may be seemingly innocent, such as pressuring someone to drink or performing acts as part of hazing rituals that can be embarrassing, I guess, to the person. When it's done to those who sit in positions of having less power and are really trying to fit in, right? The whole part of being on a team, the word team suggests that we're going to be a team. And so do people really have any voice to kind of share that they're uncomfortable with something? And so that does get lost, and we don't know that what we're doing is harmful, and we don't know that it would be considered hazing. So we talk a lot about power in general in the work that we do, but also within that team. And we have people really be honest about who holds power on the team. And so this project really looks to examine gender as an identity, specifically within sports culture, and how are we doing to engage athletes in violence prevention. And so all of this, I think, is connected to this idea of whether or not we're ignorant around hazing activities. I think that's probably too simple to say just that it's just about hazing. I think we're a little bit ignorant about some of these other social issues that are connected to hazing. So the relationship between gender norms and the expectations of what maybe masculine or feminine look like are often idealized and unrealistic. If we're speaking about gender as only being male or female, I mean, first of all, that's problematic because we're disqualifying all the other forms of gender that we know exist. But secondly, we have these strict ideas of what it means to be a man or a lady. And when people can't adhere to these strict boxes, there's some very real serious consequences and implications. So I think it's about, I guess, just identifying in a bigger way what hazing is and what falls under, I guess, hazing activities based on what is the outcome or the intended goal of these things.
So if you're just tuning in, we're about halfway through the show here. We're with Carla Bursch from the University of Calgary. She is are you the only one out there, Carla, that's doing sexual violence support advocate?
We just hired a second person today.
Oh, well, look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're one of two then out at the University of Calgary as a sexual violence support advocate. And one of three now, I guess, with the second person hired, one of three in the province. Is that true?
No, there's quite a few.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
like,
U of
I just
A.
Thought it, U of A. Okay, I was going to say I only heard about your colleague at Mount Royal, so I didn't know if there were more at schools. But
yeah, there absolutely is. There's some amazing folks across the country doing this work, definitely within Alberta, but also throughout the country. Really,
that is fantastic because again, we're not on campus, we're not students, but we certainly hear enough that we should know about this. Hopefully U of M's got something on the books to get something in place, because it'd be good to see that. But
I think Brandon does for sure.
Oh, okay.
I don't know about U of M.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on that now. See, now that's something I'm going to find out now. So as you said, one of the topics you address in the training program is homophobia, which unfortunately still spills into the language used, and mostly by men, it seems, in various sports. Often it seems that these words are, you know, are uttered accidentally. People don't mean to say them. They just happen to get into the discourse, which shouldn't happen. But hockey in particular seems to have a serious problem, as highlighted by Brock McGillis, a former OHL player and an openly gay man, who feels that the teaching to end this sort of occurrence needs to happen at both the top levels, at the NHL level, and at the grassroots levels, in order to sort of, you know, curb the usage of these words and these slurs. Do you agree with Brock in how to solve this? And secondly, How difficult, in your experience anyway, is it for any athlete to break the use of these homophobic insults once it's sort of been wired in that this might be acceptable behavior?
Mm-hmm. I do agree that it has to happen at both levels, at all levels. I think it has to happen as a society, as a culture, so that, you know, we're bringing up and building humans that aren't even going to go into these spaces believing this type of behavior or language is okay. So it's you know, it's, I think it's a bit more than just sport, where we need to do this work. But I think it's definitely possible. I mean, we saw, what team was it just last season that was under investigation because they thought somebody might have said a homophobic slur on the ice?
Toronto Maple Leafs in a game against the Tampa Bay Lightning where it was thought that a player mentioned it to an official, yeah.
And I think they ruled through investigation, found that not to be true, but I was really impressed that they even looked into it. I know it's happening. I play hockey myself, and just last season the same thing happened in one of our games. One of the female players said something quite homophobically violent to another player, and a ref heard it, and he actually just shut our game down. He said, "That's it, we're done."
Wow.
The person got a game misconduct, and we stopped playing completely, and I just thought that was great, and I went and talked to him after, and I talked a little bit about what I do, and he said, you know, I take this really seriously, whether it's female athletes, whether it's male athletes, I take the same kind of stance. So I think we're seeing people get involved and take it more seriously, which is great. And then also I do think that we can change behavior, for sure. I think that, you know, quick story, I was playing ball a few years ago. I had moved into playing co-ed, slow pitch now, and so there's some, you know, male athletes that have played pretty high-level sport and definitely fit this kind of stereotype of, you know, this bravado sport culture type person that I think we often kind of label these guys. And they were using things. I think, you know, one of the most common things they would say is that's so gay. And I just started kind of chatting with them and letting them know why it was problematic, why, you know, I know they didn't mean to, and they would say that all the time, well, we're just joking, or we don't mean it that way. And through a couple conversations, suddenly I was no longer the one kind of managing the language, and somebody would say something, and somebody else on the team would step in and say, yeah, we don't use that language on this team. And so these are guys that have been playing high-level sport in other sports, whether it's ball or, you know, scholarships out in the States playing hockey, and they were able to change, you know, over the course of a summer where I kind of just was able to step back, and even other people would come to the team and say something, and they were pretty quick to jump in. So I think people want to be good people. They want to be inclusive. They want to be kind. I think we're lacking how some of this language affects people, some of the behavior, how traumatic it can be for folks, how divisive it can feel, how excluded it can make people feel. And once we can get that message across, I think people are really keen to change and want to do better.
So, I mean, your example alone, it sounds like education is the key to breaking that sort of acceptable behavior mentality that people have then.
Yeah, absolutely. I think education is an extremely powerful tool to help people understand maybe what they maybe thought was okay or fine behavior, and nobody's just ever said anything before. Again, the people often using hurtful language are the people on the team who have more power. And so it's really hard if somebody else isn't going to step in and kind of try to hold that person to better behavior, then it just kind of continues. And lots of times there's people laughing along, and of course all of this type of behavior reinforces these things as being acceptable when they're not. So it's really, honestly, I think in my experience, having really meaningful and vulnerable conversations leads to some pretty, pretty amazing change.
So, I mean, I got to ask you, and this is going to be sort of a question that's not going to be easy to answer, and I apologize up front for this, but racism still shows up in sports, most notably in hockey, being that it's almost an exclusive white sport.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of diversity gets pointed out a lot. We've seen it you know, we've seen incidents in hockey sort of towards Indigenous players, and certainly there's been some here in the province of Manitoba. We've seen issues at the NHL level to minor leagues regarding Black players. Again, the lack of diversity becomes a major problem in the sport of hockey. So without tearing down the entire institution of hockey, because it's going to have to take major changes from all over the place to make those sort of inroads for maybe some of the minority players and some of the lesser recognized players anyway to get into the sport. But how do we change the culture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a really tough question. I haven't thought about it too much, but if I take that and place it into other contexts that I have thought about, what I kind of quickly go to is how diverse are our scouting staff? And I know that might sound like it's not really imperative, but when I look at some of the management in our NHL, I'd love to know the diversity at those levels. I know that females in those levels are pretty small. I think there's about four or five different women that are doing direct work with players in the NHL. I don't know how many other females in different spaces there are, but I don't think it's very many. No. And so if we don't start to see some diversity at levels where they get to make decisions about who's entering the NHL, I think we might still struggle with that problem.
I'm hoping that we see more of that. I mean, again, people know of, you know, Haley Wickenheiser working with the Maple Leafs, and certainly there's been some other good stories in the NBA, in the NFL, in terms of, you know, some women getting into there. But again, it's one of those things where it's almost like, and again, I hate, you know, the economics, and certainly, you know, society's economics in terms of, you know, just different classes sometimes bring about the problems within hockey, and that it's an expensive sport. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort in terms of just trying to break through that wall. But I agree with you. I think there needs to be a more open view on who gets hired for what positions now, because really, I mean, we're talking about, you know, and I hate to frame it this way, but the old boys club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How many Indigenous people are working in the NHL?
The last one that I would know of for certain that was 100% proud of his, you know, Indigenous roots was Ted Nolan, and he kind of got railroaded out of the sport. So
right, yeah. So I think that's maybe where I would focus my attention if people were really serious about starting to diversify the athletes.
So we got about 15 minutes to go here, and I'm gonna cut to the chase quickly for you here, Carla, because this will be easy for you to answer. Consent kind of is something that's, you know, for each individual person seems to be defined by that individual person themselves. That's not technically a very good thing, because consent now can have 100 million different reasons, if 100 million definitions, if we let each person define it themselves. So let's put the entire challenge to rest here. What is consent as defined by both Carla Birch and the University of Calgary?
Well, I don't have the University of Calgary's definition up, but you can find that on our website in the sexual violence policy. It's stated quite clearly there.
Okay.
But I think, you know, I probably define consent differently every time I talk about it. Some of the basic principles, though, are that it's affirmative. So we've really moved away from the old campaign. I'm dating myself probably a bit here, but we used to talk about consent as no means no. We've changed that thinking to yes means yes. So it's not enough to, you know, that there's an absence of no. So if they didn't say no, that must mean yes. In fact, we moved to talking about consent as having to be affirmative. So we must hear yes. Or have some indication that there's a yes involved. It needs to be enthusiastic. So is the other person that you are wanting to engage in this activity super excited about it? We know how that looks in other spaces in our life. So I think we're capable of discerning that in these situations. It needs to be ongoing. So I might consent to something in the beginning of an activity, and when that activity changes, consent needs to be sought out again. So those are kind of some of the three big points for people to look for. It's also important to note that it's on the person who's initiating an activity to make sure that the other person is consenting and accepting their invitation. So that's really important, and that's actually in our criminal code. We're going to put the the responsibility on the person who's initiating the activity to prove to us that they did everything they could to make sure that they obtained consent.
I'm going to say right now, I feel 100% far more interested in this training program. I want to actually see this rolled out nationwide, if not worldwide, if that's possible. But obviously, you got a lot of work to do with the athletes at the University of Calgary. Has any other team stepped up and said, we're next?
Yeah, I just got news the other day that our men's hockey team has agreed to work with us this year. Yeah, so we're going to get both of the hockey teams this year, and I think potentially we have a group of student leaders in our athletics group, so that would be athletes of both genders and from all over all the different sports. They're kind of a leadership group, and I think that group of students is also going to work with us this year.
Oh, fantastic. That's at least it's getting bigger and progressing and certainly getting into the conversation then, which is always good to see, especially when it comes to topics such as sexual violence in sports. So that's good to see. It's been a pretty heavy show so far, so we're going to finish this off with some fun.
Okay.
As we get to know Carla Bursch a little bit better. We had a little, you know, off the top, who are you? What do you do? But that doesn't really tell us about who Carla is. So let's get into this. Let's have some fun. Let's have some sort of, you know, laughter, at least to close out the show over the last 10 minutes here. So we'll start with some easy ones, some quick and painless questions here for you, Carla. Are you a Coke or a Pepsi person?
Pepsi.
Oh, okay. Not bad in terms of getting like, oh, Beansley shaking his head no. Summer or winter, which do you prefer?
Summer.
Okay. Cats.
I play ball.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but you also play hockey now, though. So
I know.
I was trying I know.
But you can play hockey in the summer.
You can.
Yeah. You can.
That's true. Yeah, it's almost year round now.
Yeah.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Okay. Tougher one. Let's have some fun with this one, though. If you won the lottery tomorrow and had the entire world at your fingertips, what's the first thing you would do?
Wow. Go on vacation?
Where to?
I don't know.
Just get away.
Yeah.
Somewhere not named off. Calgary, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not a bad setup. Not including food or water, because those are just understood in terms of everybody needs them. If you were stranded on a deserted island, what two things would have to be there with you?
Wow. Music, for sure.
Okay.
Some way to play music and something that would enable me to be active. I need to be able to play.
I'm not certain. I mean, you're going to have a whole beach that you can swim all day if you want, I guess, but
maybe a ball or
Okay. That's fair. You wake up tomorrow, you've been bestowed with a superpower. What superpower would you want?
Ooh. Maybe the ability to read minds.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you know, it'd be helpful in my training.
The most common answer to that is usually flight. So the fact that you've chosen mind reading is is kind of cool. That's a good choice on that. I never even thought about that. Favorite color?
Orange.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Dirty Dancing.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
New or old?
The old one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the original one. Nobody wants the remakes. Nobody likes the remakes. What TV show did you binge last or are currently on a quote-unquote can't-miss status with?
I just finished watching the Sense8 series on Netflix.
It's a Netflix.
I was going to say that's a good side. I've watched the first two seasons of that. It's very good.
Yeah.
If the story of Carla Bursch was made into a movie, what actress or actor would earn the role of Carla?
Sandra Bullock.
Oh, good choice. Nothing wrong with that.
Sandra Bullock.
Here's the tougher question from that one, though. What would be the hit song from that film? What song would you choose as the hit song?
Wow.
What's the song that's played in the background when Sandra Bullock makes the on-screen appearance?
That is a tough question. I mean, we did this at the beginning of the show. I love music. I don't know. I don't know if I could pick one. It would be, that's a really hard question.
Who would sing that song?
Too many amazing artists and music and
who's your favorite
genres.
Artist? Who's your favorite artist that would sing that song?
Probably Emily Haynes. I really like Metric and I love their work.
Nice.
Nothing wrong with that. Started off with metric in terms of help, I'm alive. So yeah, no, that's absolutely good answer on that. You're at dinner, four people, or four chairs, you're occupying one of them. So three others, living or dead, who would be your dinner mates?
Oh, wow. That's a, you need to give somebody time to answer that one. That's way too.
You got 8 minutes, so.
Too many options.
Lots of time.
Oh my gosh, I'm thinking about intellects. I'm thinking about athletes. I don't know. I'm thinking about feminists, amazing feminist academics that have paved the way for so much of what get to the privilege of safety today. I don't know. That's tough.
It is tough. That's why we ask these questions. Mm-hmm. Dig a little bit into Carla. See what makes her tick.
Yeah, well, maybe bell hooks would be one.
Okay.
I think Madonna would be another one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I really love Brene Brown. I think she's pretty amazing.
Do we need any other chairs? Do you want to add anybody else in there? Sounds like you got a couple of people.
Table.
Yeah.
I know. And now I'm thinking about, what are some cool athletes? Maybe Billie Jean King.
Oh, that'd be a good one. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure she would have.
Or Serena Williams is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I know I've said a couple of times and not that it has to affect you in any way, but the one person I would want to sit down with, even though I've got three other chairs, I'm sure I could talk to him all night.
Okay.
Greg Popovich.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think that guy's got a completely different view on the world, and I'd love to hear it.
Hmm.
Did you see him outrun those basketball players?
I did. Greg Popovich is
still in his age. He can run.
He's still a good guy that way. So, no, I think he's got an interesting view. But, I mean, those are fantastic, fantastic choices that way. If you get I don't know what your eating habits are. I don't know what your setup is. What is the, quote-unquote, cheat day meal for Carla Bursch?
Pizza, for sure.
Yeah? Is there a specific restaurant that you... Or is it homemade? What do you prefer for the pizza?
You know what? I'm not picky, and the athletes got pizza every session we were at. I'm not sure the coaches love that, but whatever. If it's just pizza, I'm in.
Okay, that's good. It does, mm-hmm. So from that, does pineapple belong on pizza?
No.
Oh, really? No? You're not a Hawaiian fan in terms of the way they...
You know what? I don't like the pineapple, but I like pizza so much, I am willing to pick it off.
Oh, look at that. There you go. That's all right, then. Favorite, in terms of again, cheat day stuff, favorite dessert?
Yeah, I don't love sweet things very much. Can it be like chips?
Sure. Snack foods are good. Yeah.
Guilty pleasure.
Is there a flavor that you opt for?
Barbecue.
Really, a barbecue fan? Eh? Are you like the kettle cooked barbecue or just the regular barbecue?
Regular.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah.
That's not it.
Yeah.
What does that look for, Beans?
Sorry, I have my opinions.
I see that in terms of your...
I won't let anybody know them, but...
That's okay, though, in terms of having a little fun with that, a little barbecue on the side there. Is there one place in the world that you've been to that you want to go back to that you go, you know what... I know you said, if you won the lottery, vacation would be the first thing. But if there's a place you've been to, is there one place you'd want to go back to that you were like, that's the spot, that's the place I've been to that really stands out?
I think, I've been to a few places. Actually, I traveled Europe when I was a bit younger. But I think Germany. I think I would go back to Germany. There is a lot of history there that we need to see and we need to know about, and it's pretty powerful.
I'm not digging into age here because that's kind of a personal thing, but like, are we talking like you had a chance to actually see where the wall stood, or are we talking about, got a chance to actually touch the wall?
Yeah, the wall is, I don't know, is it completely gone now?
I don't know. That I've never been there, so.
Well, it was there when I was there. I don't know if they've moved it since, but... And touring concentration camps, and there's tons of monuments throughout the city to really, I think, help that culture of people not be so remiss or dismissive of their history, which I really respect. I think we could do a better job of that in Canada when I think about, our own cultural genocide that's been going on, and it's pretty evident over there, and I have to respect that, and it's pretty powerful.
Last question before we, as we dig into your life a little bit, is Carla Birch multilingual? Can you speak other languages?
No, I can speak a bit of French, but I gave that up in grade 12. So
okay, that's fair.
Maybe yeah, it's rusty.
There you go. A little savoir faire, though. She can speak a little French, so that's okay. I'm going to give you the last sort of couple of minutes on the show here, Carla. Is there anything you want to say? I'll give you the soapbox. Anything you want to promote? Anything you, that you're doing that maybe you want to give a little recognition to? What is it that, that you want to talk about that we maybe missed out on here in the show?
You know, I don't think there's too much. I can't, you know, I'll say it again, I can't give enough credit to Danielle Goyette and Ali and all of the team for really kind of taking a leap of faith. And it was a conversation that Danielle and I had where I said, you know, some of the male athlete teams were maybe a little bit more resistant, not really sure what was kind of in it for them. And, you know, I just said to Danielle, I trust me, this is really, really valuable. And her and the team, they took they took me up on it and they took that leap of faith. And I think they definitely saw the value, and so do a lot of the other folks in our athletics department. And so I'm grateful and honored to have worked with them, and I'm really excited to see what happens with some of the other teams this year.
I know I, for one, when I read the story, I thought there was huge value in this. I think there should be more work done this way, and certainly we're glad to have had you on the show here, Carla, because I don't know if anybody is aware of what's going on in other schools that outside of, you know, what may happen at Manitoba or what may happen at their own local school. So I want to say thank you, and I want to say you're more than welcome to come back anytime you like. If things change, if you are suddenly doing the world tour of teaching people on sexual violence and some of the stuff that's going on, we would be glad to have you back anytime if you want to come back. And again, I can't say thank you enough for joining us here tonight.
Well, I feel the same way. Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
We are always happy to have people on. As we said, the bar was set low when you agreed to come on in terms of being smarter than us, but I feel like not only am I a little smarter on what's going on, but maybe hopefully we may have helped a few people out in the world as well if they heard this program. Again, keep doing the great work out there, Carla, because we definitely value it here at the University of Manitoba, and certainly on this show here on the Hockey Show, we think you're doing a great job. So keep banging away at the information and keep that training program going for sure.
Great. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. Enjoy the rest of your evening as well, Carla. We'll let you get out of here. And again, thanks for joining us here tonight.
Thank you.
So there is Carla Birch. We won't keep her on the phone longer than she has to. We'll let her get out of here because she got a busy evening probably ahead of her. 900,000 different sports that she's playing. But what do you think, Beans? Are you in favor of making this a country-wide, if not worldwide, training program? If the option's there,
there's nothing wrong with it, right? It's nothing but good things, and it's going to help people. And I think this needs to be implemented everywhere, not just universities and school. It needs to be everywhere around this world, around this country, and teach people how to act.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when she brought up the mental health stuff, obviously we got to get out of here right away with Free Range Radio coming in here right away, but the mental health stuff is certainly going to be important. Yes, the physical abuse, the physical sort of side of hazing and or, you know, some of the stuff is awful. Yeah. There are resources out there. Talk to counselors, talk to therapists. If you need somebody to call, I mean, again, I'm not saying that these are the only resources that you have, but certainly Kids Help Phone, the Bell Let's Talk Day. I mean, people are there to help you. If you need to talk about something, find somebody to talk. Again, we talk about this every week, it seems. We're here to talk. If you need to phone in and talk to somebody, we're going to be around for at least a few more minutes in the studio. Give us a call if you have to. So congratulations to Carla Birch on getting this program in place, because I think it's a tough topic to even break through on. And the fact that she's making some serious inroads out in Calgary speaks volumes to how well she's doing her job. So sure. Congratulations, Carla, on that. We're going to get out of here with a little more Metric, Help, I'm Alive. Carla's pick tonight in terms of the music she wanted to hear. It's fantastic. Metric's a fantastic band, too. Good on her. She's got great taste in music. Let's get out of here, though, with a little bit more of that. Beans, anything you want to say before we go?
Yeah, if you missed the show, it was a great show. to pull it up on UMFM website or on Hockey Blog in Canada. It was a great interview with Carla, and you should, if you missed it, you should hear it.
We'll get that up here up within the next half hour, folks, so be prepared for that if you missed it. Tune into that because it's a great, great topic to talk about. And we want to thank Carla Birch once more. University of Calgary's got a gem there in Carla. Make sure if you are going to the University of Calgary, stop by, see her. Even if you don't want to talk about stuff that's going on in your life, just say hi. She's a fantastic person, as we found out. And we are always going to be happy to have her back. Here is Metrics Help I'm Alive on The Hockey Show. We'll see you next week, folks, here on 101.5 UMFM.